All right, let me confirm. Jed, are you back with us?
Yes, how you doing? Made it.
Yes, how you doing? No, I am golden. That's how I'm doing. Welcome to the Media Biz Power Hour, an educational opportunity for those of you selling ads in print on your website and your newsletter. Whether your circulation is paid, controlled, or free, you are in the right spot. Whether you sell ads for a magazine, newspaper, or specialty or niche publication, thank you so much for joining us. Every one of our educational opportunities are intended to help you drive more revenue, sell more ads, and always have more fun. So a couple of opening words as we're getting settled in. We're always going to encourage you, close your office door, turn off anything electronics, try to eliminate or remove any distractions during our window here together. We always encourage you to do that because the more notes you make, the more notes you take, that's in essence the coach approach and coaching approach that we have followed for the last 23 plus years. It also says that when we do the research for adult learning and education, the most impact and best success for this kind of educational program is to be making notes, hence the reason why we don't put something on your screen, which would create many tasking or multitasking. With me is Jed, the CEO and founder of MediaBids. Jed, I always appreciate some opening words. Tell us what's cooking in MediaBids. Tell us what you see happening out in the world, and I'll say a few words about Power Hour, and then we're going to dial right into ROI, case studies, and selling ads. So how about some opening words, Jed?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks to Ernest. Ernest has an enormous amount of experience, and I always learn a lot by listening to his insights on a variety of topics. I'm sure today will be no different. So thanks to him for taking the time to do these teleseminars. My name's Jed Gould. I'm the president of MediaBids. We are a company. We've been around for 20 years. We work with about 10,000 publications across the country and thousands of advertisers. We are committed to driving revenue to print publications and to their online components, but we primarily find that we get the best results from print. We are in the throes of the holiday season right now, and sort of preparation for the holiday season. So that's taking up a lot of our time. We've got we always have some big clients that do very, very well during the holiday season and place an enormous number of ads. Clients like Omaha Steaks and Hale Groves Oranges and some others. And so we are currently sort of wrapped up in that. But we love to talk to publications. We love to explain what we do. We place ads in a variety of different ways. But the long and short of it is, we are trying to get national advertisers who have long ago either reduced or eliminated their print budgets to spend money in print, and we've been successful at it through, ironically, for some of the reasons that I think we're going to talk about today on the call. We would love to, we're always looking for new media partners. And so if you're using us, thank you. If you're not, please give us a call.
And if you're not using MediaBids, the answer is how come, why not? And you need to be. There's a reason, Jed, why you've been in business for the last 20 plus years. You've worked with literally tens of thousands of magazines. You've literally placed hundreds of thousands of ads and generated millions of inbound leads, all tied to paid for performance. So for each of you that are listening both here and or will listen after we finish up our live teleseminar, MediaBids knows exactly what they're doing. They're fabulous to partner with. Plus, you'll have wonderful named and branded advertisers, which helps you sell even more additional named and branded advertisers. So it's a win-win all the way around. Generate revenue and have named category advertisers. So it's certainly a win. By introduction, very briefly, my name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. I began, Jed, as you know, in the advertising sales sector in 1986. launched three of my own publications, and then I was a leader in a billion-dollar media group, launched Power Hour in 1995, and gosh, we've got clients all over the world. As you know, in recent months, we've been in and out of the Northeast, New York specifically, working with clients, working with our Canadian clients in the month of September, now working with clients in Florida during October, and by next week, I will be back in our corporate offices for the balance of the winter, our 21st winter in Park City. For those of you that might like to ski this winter and or connect with us, we do lots of entertaining in Park City during the winter months. So it's been fabulous. 23 years, we provide executive coaching, which simply means we help our clients, Jed, see what's possible and then find ways to help them accomplish the impossible. It simply means the larger the challenges, the hotter the kitchen, the greater the opportunities, we want to be there with you side by side, and that really inspires us. For those of you that would like to join us every single Tuesday, we have a live weekly Ad Sales Academy. This week was our 286th. Jed, we work on 20 key areas in our media kit presentations, which is going to be one piece of what we talk about today. We have 27 business development strategies, and then another 25 plus negotiating and sales skills, everything driven, really focused on media ad sales success. As you're listening to our Media Bits Power Hour, we have three specific goals, Jed and myself. So here they are, and then we're going to launch in. Number one, we want to share with you new ideas. We want to spur and stir your thinking as you're listening to us. We want you to stretch beyond your comfort zone. We want you to sweat, meaning we want you to go to work. And we want that comfort zone by stretching it means you're going to get and gain even more success. Number two, our second goal, if during the course of this hour we share something that you're already doing, beautiful, virtual high five, just confirms that what you're doing matches the very best in media sales success around the world. And then number three, the serendipitous. Jed might say something that sparks a story for me. I may say something to Jed. Look, there's a general area we're going to cover today, but Jed and myself are reacting to each other. We're reacting to your questions, and you're going to pop in and hear things from us that you're going to directly want to do, and it's going to spark other ideas, the serendipitous, that you weren't even planning for today. So today marks our 267th educational opportunity. Today we're going to focus on ROI, case studies, and the selling of ads. So let's begin and talk about, Jed, the building of ROI and the steps and kind of how we get our heads around that. But before we do that, I just want to say some opening words, right? When we work on return on investment, the first part is it shows that you care as a media sales professional. It shows that you are an expert. It shows that you're head and shoulders above the competitors. It shows that you can walk and talk proudly and be able to talk about before, during, and after, and verified results, and A/B testing, and examples of, you know, once we began with this, and then we shifted to that, and the results were this, this, and that on the other side. Most or nearly none of your competitors can do that, okay? It's also the reason why in the early stages of going in to meet with an ad agency or a media buyer or a decision maker, that we want to understand up front what their expectations are. We want to know up front how they're going to be tracking and measuring us. So, Jed, do you want to just say some opening words about the power of working from ROI up front, sort of having some working knowledge about ad tracking, ad history, and that kind of thing? Do you want to say some opening words about that?
I mean, sure. So just so everyone's clear, what we're talking about here is the return on investment that advertisers receive from the money that they spend for advertising. Right. So there's lots and lots of ways of doing it, but essentially, you know, in its most simplistic form, it's saying to an advertiser, you know, if I get you a customer, how much is that going to be worth to you, right? And then comparing that to what they're spending to get that customer. And in today's world, this is the metric that advertisers use to make all of their decisions, at least larger advertisers. More sophisticated advertisers are making all of their decisions based on how much money it's going to take me to get someone into the store, onto the website, to make a phone call, whatever it may be, whatever the response mechanism is, it doesn't really matter. But what matters is that you know, that that they are spending an amount of money that is going to generate, that they can generate some returns on. And it really, really varies by industry. So we can't sit here and tell you, you know, there should be, you know, it should cost a customer, you know, it should cost your client, you know, $50 to get a new client. Because if they're selling life insurance, for example, you know, that customer is worth hundreds of dollars. If they're, you know, but if they're selling flowers, that customer may, depending on sort of the company and how they handle their customers, that customer may only be worth $5 or $6, right? So however you end up charging the advertiser, what Ernest is saying is that this is a very, very valuable tool when it comes to getting advertisers to spend money and to continue to spend money.
Because it
serves as proof that their money is being spent wisely.
Absolutely. Sorry. And you're reading my mind, and that's going to be a piece of what we're going to talk about. Flowers versus life insurance, and then we'll kick in RVs, my all-time favorite, because we think about those as big and large expensive. You're right. That is a part of what's going on here, right? You know, you have to understand the space that you're in, and that comes right back to what Jed said. You have to understand, and there's a variety of things that we need to understand, but as a starting point, you know, understanding what's happening in the sector. Jed, you called it out, right? Insurance might be worth lifetime value, LTV, lifetime value. That could be a relationship with insurance that could go out 20 years. Flowers might be a small transaction, right? Omaha Steaks, if I'm an individual, might just be I'd like some nice steaks for the holidays. Omaha Steaks, if I'm a major tech company, can be a reoccurring order of what? 10,000 gifts every year. So a big distinction. And then, of course, I always throw in the wild card, Jed, RV sales. Why RVs? Because, you know, they're big, expensive vehicles. You could probably wrap in boats in there if you wanted to do that. Or, you know, vacation homes, you know, that you know, a second home. But the point is that we want all of you to think about that every one of your advertisers falls in a variety of categories of transaction versus relationship, one-time purchase versus ongoing, size of purchase, size of profitability. Does that sort of capsule, Jed, what you were saying?
Yeah, exactly. And just to quickly add to that, you know, this is such an important factor because understanding the business that you're selling to is the foundation upon which you can measure success or failure, right? So for example, you know, Ernest brought up Omaha Steaks, and these guys sell, you know, just enormous amounts of gift baskets. You know, they're extremely successful with it because they throw in, you know, they have good deals. People feel like they're getting a lot for it, for their money, and it's relatively inexpensive. So you can buy what seems like, you know, enough to feed an army for like $35, right? It's just, you know, they throw, because they add all this stuff, and it's crazy. They probably lose money on the first order when in terms of their ROI. But what you have to understand about all of your customers, and Omaha Steaks is just an example, is what are they doing after that person has become a customer? Because a company like Omaha Steaks, they are just masters at sort of the remarketing of their own clients, right? Of their own customers. Because if you buy Omaha Steaks once, they will never ever forget it. And they will remind you and call you and talk to you. And I don't mean to make it sound like they're harassing you, but they will never forget it. So the lifetime value of your purchase of that, you know, of that buyer is way, way more than the initial purchase. So when we're looking at the ROI for someone like Omaha Steaks, we can't look at it and say, okay, well, this person bought, you know, $20 worth of meat So therefore, you know, it's, you know, the return on investment wasn't good. You know, it's not fair to any media outlet, especially publications, which tend to generate clients, which do buy again and again, to measure it that way. So you really have to take into account kind of, you know, what's going to happen after that person buys, you know, and how good is the company at what I would call remarketing, like, you know, marketing to them again once they're in their database.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that takes us in, just taking a half step back. Jed, in my early days of selling ads, I sold into the multifamily apartment rental space. Large developers, large apartment buildings, they'd spend $10 million just in leasing centers. The early days, my gosh, I'd walk into apartment 2B and the manager would be behind the kitchen table. You know, that whole world changed tremendously. But there was language that we needed to learn, like what was a looky-loo, right? Or what was a B-back? A B-back, you know, renter, someone who came in, looked at the apartment building, and they were coming back with their spouse. That was a B-back. And we needed to know these things. We needed to know the jargon because it also synced up to ROI, and it showed that we understood their world. We needed to know that it wasn't called a prospect. It was called a future resident. It wasn't called a tenant. It was called a building owner. It wasn't called an apartment building. It was called a rental community. They also used something called guest cards when someone came in to track the media source. So we had to understand that. We had to know that it was a tour, not a sales pitch that they were given. We took them on a tour, and then we brought them back to the leasing center, and then we asked if they were ready to make a leasing decision. And then we also needed to know about their follow-up CRMs. Because take, for example, that if the Brown family came in October but didn't rent till January, they could go all the way back to their CRM and then their follow-up or guest card be able to know where the initial media source was. And all of these little pieces kind of stack up. Some of it is the language within a sector. Some of it is understanding the flow of how a lead works. And then what happens next, and then what happens next. So if you're working with an advertiser and you say, okay, so if they see you on the website, what happens next? Do you give them a preference to call or click on a form? If they make a phone call, what happens next? Do you track that phone call? How does that get tracked? Could you show me that report? If they make a phone call, how does that get logged into your database? Can you show me the database? Can you show me media sources? Hang on, I see 400 media sources. I don't see me. How could I ever get tracked? And by the way, Jed, that's not a make-believe story. That's a real story. I did that with an advertiser. I did the show me, then show me, then show me, then walk. And I got to that place saying, hey, could you show me where I'm in? Oh, wait a minute. You're there. Wait a minute. You're not there. And there were literally hundreds of sources to which I said, well, how could I possibly win if I'm not there? To which the buyer said, you're right. You'll get plugged in. To which the next meeting I came back to say, can you please show me? I got tucked in. Why? Because I wanted to see it. To understand the flow of the way a lead works, what happens after they come in and visit your company? And then where do you log that? And then what happens when you follow up? And then what happens if they make a purchase one day later? Can you go back to the original source a year later? What happens if they make a purchase 1 year from today? Can you come back to today? How will you track? How will you know? And how do you roll that all the way back to the original media source, okay? There's also a term in our media space called leakage. Companies don't do this well. There's leakage. You may have brought that lead today. They may not buy for 2 years from today. Little quick story on that. I was working with one of our media clients this morning, Jed, and they have a sort of a postal reply card that somebody sent in from the Dakotas. They're based in Texas, and the reply card came back, and she said, Ernest, do you see issue number 13, volume number 2? To which I was like, yeah, I see that on the card. She goes, Ernest, that was 8 years ago. We're on issue 21. To which I was like, holy smokes. She said, look at the validation. What does that say about the shelf life, right? 8 years later that lead was still live, to which I can go back and talk to my advertisers and show them that, in fact, 8 years later, right, that we're still generating ad results, which lets me reinforce that. We'll talk more when we get to case studies, but it lets me reinforce the shelf life because in my particular space of senior housing choices,
people may think they're ready to move to a retirement community and begin initial steps, and then they may stay back for 3 or 4 years, and then their children may help in a couple of more years, and then they eventually make the decision. How do you go all the way back to the media source? Well, look at this reply card, Ernest. I have proof in my hands that this person held that magazine for 8 years before they requested more information. How amazing, right? The shelf life of an ad on that site. And understanding that, and Jed, quite honestly, Flowers doesn't have an 8-year shelf life. An RV, though, may, right? Omaha Steaks may be marketing. For example, if you were on the B2B side and you were marketing Omaha Steaks to Google, you could be working with them for 8 years, that you got 7 years of no's until the 8th year that now they're willing to engage. So how do you track that and how do you flow that? Every single one of you need to understand that question, the flow of a lead and the follow-up of a lead tied back to a media source, and they're all different. For example, if you're a business journal, you may have some that have a short burn rate. For example, a copier sales company. They either contacted or not. But then to Jed's example, it might be an insurance group that those leads may kick back years later. Or if you placed an ad for RVs in that business journal years and years later, or a retirement community could be a decade later. But you still want to understand the way that that flows. Other information, you know, talking about click rates, talking about CPM, cost per thousand, talking about conversion percentages, all of these are also tied into that jargon piece. And then related to overall us talking about the tracking part, you know, you're listening to Jed and myself. Jed, we talk about number of calls. We talk about number of forms or email leads. We talk about the number of calls versus conversion, or and what is conversion? Well, in the apartment space, it was how many calls came in. Let's imagine for a second that we had 20 calls. Let's imagine 10 converted to a tour. Success factor, 50%. Of the 10 who took a tour, how many leads? Let's imagine 5, 50% conversion. Now, Jed, I know you work on the conversion side as well, related to inbound calls and leads and pay performance. Do you want to share a little piece related to that and things that you've seen on that side?
Sure. Let me just add one thing to something you just said, because it can be a little bit discouraging, I think, especially if you're dealing with local or regional advertisers who don't have the tracking ability to be able to say to you, here's exactly where our customers came from, and here's what happened with them. Because a lot of businesses don't have it, right? And it's, you know, if I had to guess, I would say that, you know, most local businesses don't have that. I mean, but the good news is that this is a great opportunity for a local media outlet, right? If you can go to someone who's advertising and say, look, if you can give me the phone number of every single person who became your customer over the last month, I can match it up with the phone numbers of people who responded to your ad. It's not going to be perfect, right? There's going to be people who look at the ad, call on a landline, and then maybe call back on a cell phone. But you're at least going to have a sense of the connection between your response and the response of and what ended up happening with the people who responded. And, you know, and this is what online advertising does so well, right, is that it gives people these really, really simple little tools that make them feel better about the money that they're spending, right? So when you buy an ad, when you spend $100 on Google, to use an example in their AdWords program, you can look and you can see, oh, look at that. You know, I had, you know, 25 people click on this keyword, and I had 10 people click on that keyword. And you feel, you know, the average advertiser who isn't following it all the way through feels like they're getting something for their money. But, you know, we're going to get to it later, I think, but that's not necessarily a good determinant of ROI, but it's at least giving them some insight into the money that they're spending. So I would encourage you, if you know, because it basically it's just a spreadsheet, right? You know, you're just, if you can track the customers that are coming from your publication to an advertiser, you can take it a step further by getting some data from them and saying, you know, okay, Joe at the hardware store, you have no idea, you know, how many people came in here as a result of our ad, but you do have, you know, a frequent buyer program, and you do get phone numbers from people. Give me a list of the phone numbers that you got this month. I'll do a quick Excel spreadsheet. I'll match it up with the phone numbers of people who called your ad from, you know, from my publication. And you know what? It's not going to be perfect, but I guarantee you there's going to be some matches. So, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff can really mm-hmm. make a difference. And so you shouldn't feel like, you know, if the advertisers you're working with don't have big, sophisticated, you know, customer management systems, that there's no hope, because there are other ways of doing it. It's just mm-hmm. a matter of effort. Sorry,
yeah, Brian, Jed. No
apology. And once again, here comes the serendipitous. I had not intended to say what I'm going to say next, which is even the smallest advertisers can be set up. You've already touched on it, and I'm just going to expand in a little story or example or two, because you're exactly right. The first person that ever taught me about tracking, and really the life of a lead, was a woman by the name of Betsy. I'm sitting in San Diego. She pulls out this folder. It wasn't the regular size. It was the legal size, you know, the long one. And she flipped it open, and it was all tabbed and all marked, and she started to walk me through. She said, here's your media source by week, number of calls, number of tours, number of closing. And I was stunned. By week. And then she goes, here's the last 90 days. It was all done paper. All done by paper. So even the smallest right. of advertiser can do this. And then I learned a little bit more. And I would say, now that's interesting. Let's match up your leases were their sales, and let's go back to the original guest card. And so now we started to be able to study, again, all paper, very simple. We could say, well, this person leased in October, but they actually came in September. Let's look at the guest card. Guest card was like the size of a 8.5 by 11 sheet cut in half. You know, that was the kind of the card. You put in your name and what brought you here and what media source and other vital information. And we would start to go back and forth. And it was interesting because on the lease agreement, it said, oh, I found you by driving by. We'd go back to the guest card when they first showed up at the property, and it said that ad came from the newspaper. That ad came from a billboard. We're like, wait a minute, there was a gap. So what do we start to learn? Number one, go back to the original guest card. When they remembered their media source, that was more accurate. Number two, we learned that the shelf life, like somebody who rented in October might have come in September, but could have also come 6 months ago. So we learned to go all the way back and match back and forth. A perfect example of what it is you're talking about related to simple tracking. Here was another whisper. On those guest cards, when you'd walk into a leasing center, there was a checkbox called driving by. What do you mean you're driving by? No one drives by and randomly stops in Omaha Steaks because of nothing. No, something brought you there, especially some of these apartment developers were building apartments in residential communities. What does that mean? You can't see them from the main road, Jed. You have to take a turn and then another turn and then another turn, and there was 150 units of rental apartments, right? So if you couldn't get there by truly seeing it, you weren't driving by. Something brought you there. So and in some cases, we go to the advertiser and they say, oh, we don't need your ads. Half of the people that come in here are just driving by. And we said, that's interesting, because it took three turns off the main road to find you. Let's remove that as a source. You'll get better tracking information. Once again, basic. So as you're listening to us talk about, you know, this can be very highfalutin and complex. And on the other side, it can be as basic as a spreadsheet. It can be as basic as a Word doc. It can be as basic as a little investigative reporting. One more story on this. And Jed, you're spurring the serendipitous for me. We were working with, again, another apartment community that was smack between Los Angeles and Orange County. And they said, you have a magazine in Orange County. You have one in L.A. Where should we place our ad? What did we say? We're going to go back and look at every renter who rented in the last 90 days and go look at their prior zip code. Where did they come from? And then we're going to go look at the last 120 days of your guest cards to see where your leads were coming from. What did we learn?
half were coming north in LA, the other half were coming south in Orange County. They bought an ad in both magazines. Basic, roll up your sleeve, research, and that's how we learned to do it. So, Jed, I had not planned on sharing that in a serendipitous way. You sparked that point, and we want all of you to hear that this is the roll up your sleeves, gritty way that you go to work tracking and understanding a lead. Let's add a couple more pieces, okay? You also need to understand industry data and really understand what's happening. Jed already touched on life insurance can be the lifetime value, could be worth a lot of money over the life of that, right? Take, for example, I like to use, Jed, the example of RVs, right? A big purchase. You know, what happens when you sell a new RV versus a used RV? Which is more profitable? You need to know that if you're selling ads into what? RV dealerships, right? How many RV dealers will a person shop? What do the stats tell you in the sector? Do they go to one RV dealer and they're done? Are they willing to shop 21? How far are they willing to go or drive? That's another data point, right? How far are they willing? You know, and in terms of this piece, when you look at, how about the other side? How often are they willing to buy an RV today and buy another one a year from today, or 3 years from today, or 5 years today, or 10 years from today? So the bottom line is, what we're challenging you to say is, well, Ernest and Jed, I know nothing about RV sales. Okay, cool. But if you were selling ads to RV dealers, you would need to know that data. You'd either be surveying for it, asking dealers, reading industry white papers, okay, in that small example. Now let's bring it back to flowers. Let's bring it back to life insurance. Let's bring it back to Omaha Steaks. All of those things need to be answered to those that you are selling advertising to. Now, before we get, you know, too far down the path on this, remember that this information counts the most based on where your revenue is, either where your revenue is or where you want it to be. So it's obvious. If you're selling to RV dealers, you have to know this cold. If you're a business journal or you're a city magazine or you're a newspaper, you go, guys, I've got 100 categories. Okay, that may be, but here's what we challenge you. Number one, which category or categories are your top 10 from current revenue? Which categories have the most potential, the top 10? For those 10 on each side, you need to know this kind of data. Okay, that's what we're talking about from that perspective, and that's what ties into your ROI, your return on investment, because now you can back in. So you can say, if you buy an ad for $1 with me and you sell one life insurance policy, and given what the average sale is and given what the lifetime value and given what the profitability and given the referrals you're going to get from that one person for that, there's some top line number less the cost of the ad equals the profitability from that simple one transaction, one sale. Jed, does that make sense?
It does. And from a sales perspective, the difference really is the difference between trying to get someone to buy real estate in your publication for reasons that are somewhat arbitrary versus proving to that person that they need to buy with you, right? And I can't overstate, at least for me personally, how much more fun it is to sell from a statistics-based perspective, because it's not about that customer liking you. It's not about, you know, are they in a good mood or a bad mood, or, you know, maybe their budget is down this year or this month. I mean, none of that stuff really matters anymore, right? What matters is, hey, I have customers, and what you're selling is, you're not selling real estate, you're selling customers, right? You have access to customers that they do not have access to. Your publication is the gateway to these customers. Now, how are you going to prove to them that the customers that you have are ones that are valuable to them? And really, that's all it boils down to is I can prove, you know, we can make money for you. You know, we just need a way of proving it. You know, so mm-hmm. most advertisers, when you sort of frame it like that, when you say, you know, we can make money for you, we will make money for you, you know, I believe we'll make money for you. Here's why I believe it. Here's some examples of other people who've made money, who are in your industry or have similar types of businesses. Most advertisers just leap at that, right? Because it becomes almost like a no-risk proposition. Sure, they have to spend some money up front, but if you're even half right in what you're saying, then it becomes a pretty attractive offer. The you know, I mean, we could do a whole teleseminar on sort of the shifting risk and how risk has shifted when it comes to marketing. But the truth of the matter is, and it's not fair and it may not be right, but the truth of the matter is that more and more advertisers perceive advertising as something, and marketing in general, as not being something which should be a risk, right? It used to be you go out, you sell an ad, you know, or you buy an ad if you were a business, and you'd hope that it would bring some returns. And, you know, the old saying, you know, 50% of my advertising doesn't work. I just wish I knew which 50%, right? That does not mm-hmm. apply anymore, right? That has gone out the window. Right. More and more advertisers expect to know exactly what their marketing dollars are going for and exactly what they're generating. So I think that, you know, for me, like when I sort of stumbled upon this way of thinking about advertising, for me, it was a revelation, you know, because the thing that I really like and the thing I think that, you know, you as a publication owner or employee should like is, let's say you do a bunch of work, you know, and you say, okay, I'm going to dig into RVs here. You know, I'm going to try to figure out, you know, what the lifetime value is. I'm going to talk to a few people. I'm going to get some information. And you go into an RV place and the guy says, you know, get the hell out of here. I have no intention of buying an ad from you ever. Right. Okay. That's fine. Right. You take your information and your customers and you go into another dealer, right? And you go into that dealer and it may not even geographically be as convenient, but that's okay. You call up that dealer and you say, look, I have reason to believe, you know, that if you spend $1 with me, I'm going to be able to generate 3 for you in 3 to 5 years, right? And here's why I think it. And the guy might say, ah, no, you're off on that number. But you know what? You're going to get information and you're much, much more likely to make the sale than calling them up and just saying, hey, we got great prices on quarter page ads. You want to buy one, right? It just doesn't work as well.
Absolutely. So let's pause here before we get to our second and third point. We're going to just tuck in a couple of questions right here, Jed. I want to field the question from Anita, and Anita, actually, you're in the senior space, so I'm hoping the eight-year story rung your bell. We spent a long, long time working with many leaders in the senior media space and know it backward and forward. Plus, I know you're in Florida, and I am as well, so maybe we'll have a follow-up conversation. Your question about length of agreements, the biggest thing that we notice in length of agreements, we talk about this in merchandising a rate card, is not enough of a spread. Between a 3, 6, and 12 month agreement or a 4, 8, and 12, that spread has to be well merchandised. And we notice not enough spread when you look at the difference between a quarter, half, and full, or media sizes or newsletter sizes. We don't see enough spread and therefore enough incentive. And we are not fans of 1X one-time runs in general. The only exception might be a one-off trade show or one-off convention or one-off company for sale. But other than that, we don't like those at all. So, Anita, I hope that's helpful. And, again, would love to chat with you about the senior life space you're in. Let's see. Lynn. Lynn in Tennessee, more about optimization. Again, we've done educational teleseminars on this. Like sighting a rifle or dominoes being knocked down, you've got to know what you want to be seen for. There's research with Google to know where the volume and velocity of searches are. Then your website has to be set up for that, both in the meta information and the content, and then you need to drive social media as well to it. There is a step-by-step-by-step process. If you'd like to learn more, ping me a note. I'd be happy to share. We've done this for the last 10 years, helping our clients with the optimization side. The other side of it is engagement on their website
and then conversion from website visitors to advertiser sales results. So there's a whole step-by-step process. Last but not least, Max, Max, you are on nearly all of our calls over all of the years, and your comment about how do we get sales reps to sell data and not sell by price, well, we're hoping that they're listening here as well today, because when you sell from data, you always win. And the selling by price, which is a prior teleseminar, literally is a downward spiral. The moment you come off your rate card and your competitors identify that, you will have a world of hurt on that side. Most importantly, it's fun to earn higher commissions when you sell right from your rate card. It's all about rate card integrity. So, Max, thank you for your question. Jed, any comment on any of those three before we tuck back into
I have a second part?
Yeah.
I have an idea for Max, right? And so one of the biggest problems on the local level in selling with data is getting data from advertisers, right? What if publications, and I've heard of some publications doing this, and I think it's a great idea, is what if, you know, I spoke earlier about remarketing. And one of the things that Omaha Steak does so well, right, is that once you buy and once you're a customer, they never let you forget it, right? But what if a publication like Max's stepped up and did some of that remarketing for advertisers? So, for example, you go to an advertiser and you say, look, you're going to buy this ad from us, right? But if you buy a 6-month or 12-month contract, right, you're going to be part of our remarketing branding effort. And what we're going to do is we're going to come to you in, you know, whatever, August, and we're going to say, give us, you know, 500 customers. Give us 500 customers who never bought but you think could become good customers. And you could then produce something. It could be as simple as a postcard, right? Which essentially just reminds them that business exists. Maybe you have, you know, a discounted offer, you know, for the coupon, but maybe that becomes something that you throw in as part of a longer term contract in an effort to just bring those customers back. I think it really gets cool if you start to, especially if you're in a specific geographic region and not, it's probably a little tougher in niche scenarios, but if you're in a specific geographic region, it could get really cool because now you can piggyback different businesses' customers, right? Not competing businesses, but maybe the guy who's selling garden supplies, you know, maybe the guy who sells pools, you know, they have similar types of customers, right? So you can kind of piggyback on that, and maybe everyone wins. But it just becomes like an extra perk, because I can guarantee you that these guys are doing a minimal effort for remarketing to their customers, and that's easy money, right? Like those people are people who have expressed an interest. Maybe they bought in the past but haven't bought recently. Maybe they talked to someone but, you know, got a quote on something but never followed through. You know, maybe they bought one thing but you know, they can buy more. They've shown themselves to be predisposed to being a potential further customer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what Jed is saying is think out of the box, be creative, keep leaning in, keep listening to your advertisers, and that's really the very essence. Jed, in my own experience, one of the things we learned from advertisers is their team was not converting enough tours to leases. What do we put on? Leasing and sales seminars. One of the things that we learned was that they weren't doing a good enough job with their training. What did we do? We did shopping reports. We sent in pretend renters. They compiled a 100-point survey and then fed it back to the building owners, who could then give coaching and feedback. These are the kinds of things that you do behind the scenes if you keep asking and listening and learning from that perspective. Let's move to the second point that we promised to cover today, to now say, so what about ROI and how do you convert that into case studies? Case studies are written examples of before, during, and after. Once upon a time, an advertiser launched and said, we want to sell steaks. Once upon a time, we sold steaks in two locations. Once upon a time, we rolled out across 200 locations. Once upon a time, we became a global entity, hence Omaha Steaks, okay? And along the way, we bought a little ad and then a bigger ad and then a bigger ad. I think we all have those examples of before, during, and after, okay? And so a case study is that kind of write-up. It can be a third of a page, a half a page, a full page. It goes into your media kit. If you don't know what the scenario is going into a presentation, then you bring some samples. But if I happen to know that a particular company is really interested in A-B testing, Jed, then I'm going to bring in case studies. Once upon a time, we worked with an advertiser. They tried three different versions of A-B testing, and this is what we learned. And as a result, this is how we crafted their ad going forward. Okay, so that would be the kind of media case study that we're talking about. It also includes the words feel, felt, found. I know how you feel about starting with a smaller ad, and others have felt that way, but let me share with you what we have found over time is that our advertisers start here, grow to here, and ultimately grow to there. Boom, a beautiful story. Or feel, I know how you feel being in that other publication or other website or other newsletter, and others have felt that way, but when they compared us to them side by side, what they have found is we generate a better ROI. So a media case study gives you that clout, and then whenever you're going to present them, we always insert the words, with your permission, Mary, with your permission, Bill, can I walk you through a case study? It simply says that you have a blueprint for their success. And the kinds of case studies, Jed, that we encourage, one is, like we've talked about, the ad size. Once upon a time, we had an advertiser. They did flowers. They went from here to here to here. And one day, they were the largest flower company in the world. And they don't have to be that. It could just be the fact that, you know, their business doubled. It could just be that they opened a second flower shop. That was their dream. It could just be that they expanded from two flowers to four flowers that they could sell. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be that a company grew from here to the moon. It could be from here to a toothpick. But they were pleased that they doubled their revenue. They were pleased that they could sustain their company for 10 years. They were pleased that they could fold in their family members and continue it into a next generation. So don't feel it has to be Mount Everett or it's a pebble. There's lots of other smaller stories in between being rated ad size. It could be by the type of ad campaign. Jed, this is sort of reflecting on when you shared about black and white ads versus color ads, placement of ads, size of ads, type of ads. And I kind of put that in there, Jed, as a placeholder, because you've talked about different kinds of ad campaigns generate different kinds of results, correct?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's, there's so many variables and you can, you know, you can really find some astounding statistics once you sort of, you know, dig into it. It's all kind of contingent on tracking though, right? Like, you know, none of this case studies are hard to do if you don't have the data to show how one thing's doing versus another. You know, just a quick aside to that, just one item that you didn't mention, but is probably the single most important variable for readers of print, and that is the offer, right? If an advertiser does not have a compelling offer or a competitive offer, it is very, very difficult to succeed. If they have a compelling and competitive offer, then in almost all cases they will compete and probably do pretty well with their ad.
Beautiful. And that is a good reminder, because that's our role from a media buying or media provider solution, that you say, hey, look, I know you want to place an ad in our publication, newsletter, website for your RV dealership, but I want to show you what others are doing. You're not comparable. You're not comparing. Do you realize that they're all offering first-year insurance free? Do you realize that they're all offering 5 years of free car washes? Do you realize So your offer is not compelling enough. And Jed, that's excellent. Thank you so much for tucking that in and reminding us that we have to be honest, right? Well, I'm glad that you're doing an ad, but it's a branding ad. There's no call to action. Are you okay with that? You say to the decision maker, you realize that this is heavy in copy, short on offer, that this is not comparable to the way other chiropractors are placing ads. Do you realize that? You're okay with that? Great. Then therefore, we've talked about your expectations versus, you know, you're going to come back and knock on my door in 30 days and say, I'm not happy with the results. And I'm going to say, wait a minute. Remember, we talked about your offer. It's not competitive. You're not competing. Oh, now you're ready to change? All right, good. But don't fire me. Don't throw out the baby in the bathwater because I told you up front. Remember that conversation we had last month? So, Jed, an excellent point related to that. One of my favorite case studies, Jed, is the classic, you know, I was in your competitor. I ran an ad with you. I compared side by side, and I canceled their ad. To each of you and all of you, it's the most compelling case study of all. It simply says, yes, you're in, you know, competitor A or competitor B or competitor C. You notice I'm not naming them because I don't want to badmouth them. I don't want to go down that path. But if challenged, if I know I'm going into a meeting and I know that that advertiser is in my three direct competitors, I do have a case study for each of them that simply says, once upon a time, we used to place ads in media group A. And here's the before, here's the during, and here's the after, and the ROI that I generated far superior than that particular competitor. It's my favorite side-by-side. And if you don't have that, it's really a challenge to handle that piece of negotiation. The way that we do it is three parts. One, we handle it by case study to overcome that objection. Two, we handle it by testimonials. And three, side-by-side comparisons. You need all three of those pieces together to make it work. If you only have one of the three, it's okay. It's not enough. Two of the three better. But if you want to go in and close, which is what we focus on every Tuesday in our Ad Sales Academy, we focus on closing 100%. We're not there halfway. We're not there to coach and guide you around, you know, we're going to close one of three or one of four. Now, that's not who we work with, and that's not the kind of coaching and training we do on our Tuesday academies. We focus directly on how to own your space and how to decimate your competitors, and this is the way that we do it. sort of in summary, the things about case studies and the things that we've been talking about ROI, it proves that you work. You've heard Jed talk about it. You've heard me give examples. It proves that you work and that you're able to measure it. Number two, it shows that you're ad savvy. You're just not in there like everybody else saying you want to buy an ad. You want to renew your ad. Gee, I wish you would buy an ad. Gee, I wish you would try us. That is not selling in this media space. It wasn't selling for me three decades ago when I stepped into this media space. That didn't work then, and it doesn't work now. I don't like to beg or grovel or hope or wish, okay? I want to own my space, and that's why you're here today listening to what we have to share. It shows you're ad savvy. It shows that you're different than your competitors. Your competitors are not coming in with the alignment of ROI, case studies, testimonials, and can validate all of the side-by-side information. It's totally different. And it means you've earned the right to ask for the sale. It means you've earned the right. Jed, when you're working with a group that's going to come to you and talk to you about working with you and media bids and the ads you're going to place, and you can go right down the list, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to buy. Here's what you can expect on the other side. Then you, 30 days later, you can come back and say, based on what we bought, based on what we did, here's what you can see, here's what you can validate. Now we want more money for more ads and more numbers and more results. You go back and forth, you go on us, yeah, all day long we're having a ball because we know what we're doing when we place ads and we know what we're doing when we're measuring ads, and we got advertisers on the other side that are what? They're giddy in working with media bids, correct?
Right, because in their mind it's not about buying ads, it's about getting customers at a certain level. To sort of bring it back full circle to what we started with, it's getting customers at a price that they know they can make money on. One thing I wanted to add about case study is just really mm-hmm. quickly is that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people on the call run into the objection of businesses that are using primarily online advertising. Well, you know, it's really, really easy to come up with a case study that kind of outlines what the return on investment probably is for a business that's similar to the one that, whatever it is that you're talking to. You know, first of all, you can go in to AdWords and you can see exactly what people are paying for any given keyword, right? So you can just pretend to be a plumber and say, you know, plumbers in Dayton you want as a keyword, and you can see exactly what the click rate is for that. You know, and then there are lots and lots of websites out there that sort of track the return that people are getting on clicks. So you'll find that in general, it's shockingly low. I mean, very, very low, like way under 1%, like 0.5% is what people are seeing in terms of conversion from clicks to customers. So, you know, using those stats, right, it becomes pretty easy to come up with a maybe case study is the wrong word, but to come up with to overcome that objection through something like a case study where you can say, you know, a plumber who spends $1,000 a month on advertising online is likely to generate, you know, 10 new customers, right? A plumber who spends $1,000 with us, based on the phone calls that we see coming in from other plumbers, based on what we know other plumbers close at, based, you know, from our clients, you know, is going to generate, you know, 25 customers, you know, where do you want to spend your $1,000, right? If you can make an argument like that, the sale becomes pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly the point. And that's really what this is. You're going to always hear from Jed and myself, we never back off. We never play in second place. We never apologize. We never grovel for our ads. And we expect the renewals every step of the way with every ad, with every media group, with every ad sales, period. That's how we play. That's how we roll. As we wrap up here, take a look at media bids. For those of you who are working with them, you already know all the success of what they've done. For those of you that haven't, take a look, make certain you understand what they do, ask questions, and learn. Related to those of you that would like to learn more about our Sales Academy, simply come into powerhour.com. You'll see we have a huge website, and we've been doing this for the last 23 years, and we'd love to help you and your sales team every step of the way. Jed, it's always a pleasure working here together. Would you like to say some closing words before we wrap up for today?
No, thanks to everyone for joining us. You know, if you have any questions or, you know, disagree with something that probably I said, then feel free to get in touch with me. I'm always happy to talk about it.
No, so. No. And there was nothing I would disagree with, okay? So hang on to your hat on that one. We're not ending on that note.
Yeah.
When Jed speaks, right, I listen, okay? And once or twice a year, when Jed says, hey, I'm going to run that teleseminar, I have pages of notes, so don't get me started on that, Jed.
Yeah.
He is a wealth of knowledge, and he sits at a keyboard with tens of thousands of advertising on the left and millions of calls on the right. He has the most unique perspective and point of view, end of story, and make certain you never play him in chess, period, okay? Because he is the man. All right, very good. Listen, Jed, always a pleasure to each of you and all of you. Thank you so much for joining us. Please come back next month to our Media Bids Power Hour. We look forward to seeing you. And, Jed, thank you to you and your team. It's absolutely always a pleasure working together, okay?
Great. Thank you, and thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Take care. Have a good day.
Talk to you later. Bye.